This is the Annex Wealth Management SWAT podcast. We're at episode 101. It's Monday. It's April 29th. Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. It's insight and perspective from members of the Annex Wealth Management Investment Committee. Joining us, Trevor Nargis, Supervisor Trading Team. Hey, Trevor.
Hey, Danny.
And we got Jason Cooper, Director of Equity Research. Welcome to you.
Hey, Danny. I'd like to start off by thanking all the listeners that come back week after week. If you like what you hear, please share with a friend, colleague, or family member. We really enjoy making these, and you're listening and spreading the word means a lot. So let's dive in.
Yeah. So, you know, in this modern day and age, there's always a lot of news every single week, but a couple things to really hit on for the week ahead. And that would be, it's a very busy week as far as earnings season is concerned. Jason, I know you're in the thick of that, dealing with those calls. A couple other things to monitor this week. We obviously have a Fed meeting. We'll maybe get a decision on rates. Right now, market is pricing in things really staying the same. And then one of the other bigger pieces to note is going to be some payroll data that we get. So that's what's coming up this week. Jason, let's dive into strengths. What do you got?
The AI trade is just continuing. The two main areas that we're focusing on are AI platforms. So we had strong results this week from Alphabet and Microsoft. I mean, Microsoft's been highlighting the strength of its Copilot, but even with Alphabet, you're seeing really strong demand for Google Cloud, and then on Microsoft's side, Azure, for AI-enhanced processes. And then the demand for that has manifested in really incredible demand for any type of semiconductor company that's related to artificial intelligence, and that spans foundries like Taiwan Semiconductor, which has almost every single major relationship with AI companies from a GPU perspective, the semiconductor equipment manufacturers like ASML, AMAT, Lam Research, but also the winner from the GPU perspective thus far, NVIDIA. What was really interesting from my perspective, you had Meta come out and their guidance, you know, with respect to CapEx really surprised markets. And, you know, you see what Alphabet has to say, and they're kind of, they keep it close to the vest a little bit. They won't even talk about 2025 CapEx plans, but Zuckerberg effectively laid out that not only are you seeing strong CapEx in the current year, but it's going to accelerate over the next several years. And that really corroborates the story that's been told by Taiwan Semiconductor, by NVIDIA, that this is a multi-year significant step up in CapEx that these companies are going to have to make. Strength across a lot of those share prices, but also strength across, obviously, the fundamentals, since those two should align.
Yeah, and to your point, Jason, there's a lot of demand to ensure that the infrastructure is in place to house and process all that data that's needed to further develop AI efforts. What we've seen as well concerning commentary from a plethora of companies is that those AI-related CapEx projects are kind of the stickier ones, the ones that these companies are really focusing on right now. They're even maybe a little more willing to forego projects in some other areas to really dive in to their AI efforts. So definitely strong demand there.
Yeah, and that was really highlighted on the ServiceNow conference call. They effectively have a platform of software services that span HR, information technology, accounting. What they effectively highlighted is this is the first time where you're really seeing not just like the chief technology officer instituting CapEx plans, but it's actually being directed from the chief executive. They're really hands-on because at the end of the day, they're seeing such strong promise for efficiency enhancements. And when you have higher levels of efficiency, that flows directly through the income and cash flow statements to increase profitability metrics that can lead to higher degrees of internal generated growth or payouts to shareholders.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, AI has more implications than just the tech space. So we can talk about some other areas here too that we're seeing as far as being strong, maybe not necessarily AI related, but just building on strengths here. You know, Jason, we talked about capital markets being strong as well, or businesses that are related to capital markets. What are you seeing there?
You had really strong commentary from the likes of Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley. With tight credit spreads, companies have effectively gone to market to issue debt at a rate that hadn't been seen in quite some time. You have a lot of maturities in 2024, so they kind of got ahead of where they needed to be given favorable spreads, and really issued as much as they could to indemnify themselves against having any type of liquidity risk throughout the year. But it's not just on the debt side. You're seeing increased M&A activity. You're seeing increased IPOs, secondary offerings. And there has been, you know, this prolonged period where the capital markets have been underutilized. You had uncertainty surrounding COVID, uncertainty surrounding inflation, now uncertainty with higher interest rates. But now that all of those things are, for the most part, in the rearview mirror, you have to do something when you're a business looking to grow, and that requires capital. So they're seeing a strong backlog, and it seems like the trend is their friend.
Absolutely. And, you know, I have some comments on copper being strong as of late, too, but we'll dive into that a little further as well, but just at least wanted to give that nugget there. Jason, let's pivot into weaknesses. What are you seeing?
We talked about semiconductors. Now, one area that hasn't quite turned yet are the mature nodes. So anything related to industrial, automotive, consumer electronics, there's still pretty weak demand there. Now, guidance is that that's going to pick up towards the back half of the year. And we're also expecting to see the DRAM market improve towards the end of the year and also NAND. But for now, and those two are more on the memory side, but for now, there is pretty weak demand. And you look at Intel's earnings and not quite a beneficiary, and they're continuing to increase CapEx to have domestic foundry capabilities. So there are areas of weakness still in the semiconductor space. But again, markets are forward-looking, and once those areas start to turn, expect to see those discounted.
Kind of moving on further here too, another thing that we're seeing as far as implications for maybe some of those tangible goods or consumer products, maybe even durable goods, is that we've seen LTL demand be weak. You know, that was kind of highlighted by Old Dominion here. You know, you've seen steel companies under pressure, but there's been more positive guidance going forward with respect to infrastructure investment. But, you know, as potentially kind of a shorter term headwind here, we've talked about this bifurcation of the consumer that we've seen with that demand maybe being a little weaker here with a bigger transport company like Old Dominion could have implications for what the consumer's really seeing.
Darden, so if you ever go to Olive Garden, they're owned by Darden, endless breadsticks for the win. But they had a really interesting commentary. They highlighted that households with incomes over $150,000 were spending significantly more this year than they were last year. But when you look at those households with incomes below $75,000, and I think that's pretty close to the median income in the United States, those families are, I would say, suffering more, or they're at least not taking advantage of the all-you-can-eat breadstick option at Olive Garden. So it kind of ties back to what we've been talking about with how inflation disproportionately impacts people at the lower end of the spectrum from an income perspective or wealth perspective. I think it was, you know, our chief economist, Brian Jacobson, he highlighted that the personal consumption expenditure component of the Q1 GDP report was strong, but, like, you know, durable purchases weren't really great. So those are some of those big ticket items. Turning to the service side, which was stronger, it was the non-discretionary items that really drove consumer spending. So everyone, I assume, has some form of insurance. And we've all noticed inflation over the last couple of years creeping into auto, homeowner insurance. If you own any types of those goods, you need to pay that just to insure yourself. And that's really bolstered spending, but I wouldn't say it's bolstered it in a positive way from a consumer's perspective. And on the weak side, it's, well, if you're spending more for those non-discretionary items, what are you having to cut? So
yeah, and I mean,
at least Olive Garden.
Yeah. And you look at the trend in something like health insurance premiums over time too, right? Those have continually just kind of made an upward move, taking a longer term view. You know, one thing too on the consumer with the restaurant theme, right? You talked about Olive Garden. Another piece of insight we were able to gauge from some earnings calls too is, you know, you listen to someone like McDonald's, right? And they're talking about the consumer who, you know, makes around $40,000 a year or less, and they've really seen traffic from that demographic plummet. Kind of a fun inflation metric that some people like to look at is the Big Mac Index as kind of an alternative based on, you know, the prices of all the goods that go into making a Big Mac. What has that done over time? That's risen steadily. So, you know, tying in what McDonald's is seeing from a demographic standpoint versus the fun kind of McDonald's related inflation metric. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting what's happening here, right? We have, like I said, that bifurcation amongst consumers. And I think we can kind of pivot that into what we've seen as far as University of Michigan consumer sentiment surveys. Jason, what have you seen there?
Yeah, that number came out on Friday, and the number's still around 77. So it's had a nice pickup on a year-to-date basis. But if you were to look at the survey results from like 2016 to 2020, it actually tended to bottom at 90. So the consumer, it's feeling better, but it's still not had a return to a pre-COVID environment.
And real
maybe that's a good opportunity to turn to opportunities.
I'll let you take the lead on that one. What are you seeing?
We talked about the benefits for some of these artificial intelligence companies. It seems like from our perspective, one of the better ways to play it continues to be semiconductors that have greater exposure. If you can find them at a reasonably attractive valuation, and some of them still trade there based on projected growth. And when I say based on projected growth, it's under the assumption that those capital investment plans materialize. But based on all the guidance that we're hearing, it seems likely. So you can still find relatively attractive opportunities there without taking what I would consider to be significant risk. Now, there's always risks involved in investments, but from a valuation perspective and fundamentals, there at least seems to be some support continuing for those names.
Yeah, and this is more combining a strength with opportunities, right? I mentioned a small little bit about copper prices, right? Those have been super strong, kind of seeing the highest levels in copper prices that we've seen since 2022. And, you know, copper is just one of many rare metals. But when you think about chips, right, and semiconductors, those raw materials, like the precious metals, are needed to make these types of chips. So something to think about there as well.
Yeah, and with respect to copper, it's a really interesting position because you have these sell-side analysts, and they were already predicting that you would see a deficit materialize in 2025 just because there hasn't really been enough investment in either brownfield, so expansions of existing mines, but certainly greenfield, so new mine development, because you've had a prolonged period of lower prices. Lower prices don't incentivize investment. Higher prices incentivize investment. And because you've had lower prices for really since the end of the copper bull market in the early 2000s, which I think ended close to 2011, you've had a pretty steep fall off in capital investment plans. Now, to your point, Trevor, all of these data centers require tremendous amount of copper on the electrification side. So not only do you have demand for energy, you also have demand for copper as an input. But even with these prices moving higher, you're still seeing cost to operate a mine from a wage and energy perspective be higher. But you're also seeing, from a jurisdictional or geopolitical perspective, increased risk with respect to mine nationalization. So on some of the calls that I've listened to, they're talking about how previously they had pretty stringent capital requirements after going through this period where these companies haven't really done anything for a long period of time with respect to generating adequate returns for its shareholder base. But now you throw in the prospect of nationalization, and what they do is they just say, okay, well, if I'm going to start a new mine or expand an existing mine, I'm going to increase their working average cost of capital in order to ensure that if something were to materialize, they're reducing the risk to their shareholders. And it seems like that's going to necessitate higher prices to really fuel that investment. And one of the easiest ways to increase your production is if stocks are attractively valued, just buying another company instead of buying an asset that's still in the ground. So you saw BHP looking to buy Anglo America this week. And it's not a small acquisition. I think Anglo America is $35 billion in market capitalization. So clearly, these companies are seeing an opportunity to invest and get more production, either organically through an investment perspective or inorganically through mergers and acquisitions.
Yeah, and then pivoting over to, you know, we mentioned healthcare premiums, right? But as far as opportunities are concerned, Jason, we were talking as a team about the healthcare space and some opportunities that we're potentially seeing pop up in that area of the market. What are you seeing?
I think actually on a SWAT episode in Q4, we highlighted some of the bullwhip effect with respect to how inventories have been managed across a lot of the healthcare industry. So inventories were effectively overstocked in Q4. A lot of these companies guided that there was going to be a period where they had to work off those inventories, meaning lower sales growth on a go-forward basis. Share prices took a hit because it impacted sales growth into 2024. Now we're starting to come out on the other side, and we're not in the all clear yet, but the market's a discounting mechanism, and some of those issues are trading much stronger. And then another area, just thinking about what happened this week, was anything relating to advertising spend. Obviously, good top-line results from Alphabet and Meta, but also Snap, so Snapchat, with really positive results, I think rallying 27% on Friday, also with a favorable outlook. So it seems like ad spend's holding up.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, let's keep it moving here, Jason. Let's get into threats. You know, we've been talking internally about a couple different things we've been seeing, given moves in inflation expectations and rates and even GDP growth. And, you know, as far as threats are concerned, I think a threat that more people are starting to give a little more serious thought to is that growth potentially slows with maybe more of a stagflationary environment materializing here, right? Because that could lend itself to multiple compression going forward if we see that start to play out. I mean, you look at CPI year over year, we've really hung in that 3 to 3.5% range here for the past, I don't know, call it 10 months, right? Ever since June of 2023, we've kind of been stuck at that 3% level. But I think that is a threat and something to think about.
Yeah, the GDP print looks at real growth, and also there's an inflation component, and the inflation component came in strong, whereas the growth component came in a bit weaker. And there were some offsets with respect to net imports, but I would say that inflation seems maybe a little bit stickier than we previously anticipated. And that ties into another threat, right? Because one of the things that the market is beginning to discount is a reacceleration in earnings growth away from the Mag 7 or these gigantic AI beneficiaries, more towards the average company. And you would expect that to start showing up in breadth for the market. But if you have structurally higher inflation, that could lead to lower margins on a go-forward basis. And a lot of those companies don't have the pricing power that one of these behemoths has. So if you lack pricing power and your input costs are rising, maybe that earnings reacceleration for the 493 other companies doesn't materialize, or doesn't materialize as strongly, in which case the broader market is susceptible.
Yeah, and you also have some potential pressure, you know, as people saw those figures, maybe it's a little short-sighted, maybe it has more weight to it, but, you know, it begs the question, are rate hikes potentially back on the table, right? I mean, Fed meets next week. Right now, market is basically saying, you know, the Fed's going to hold the course, right? No hikes, no cuts at the next meeting, but perhaps these types of, I guess, happenings from an economic standpoint could give Fed members, you know, a reason to think about, do we need to think about hiking again? Now, that creates a very interesting situation, right? Because on previous episodes, and we talk about it as a team, is what higher rates potentially do to federal budget deficits, right? Especially if you're relying on debt to kind of finance those. But there is a potential threat around more hikes.
Not only to the federal government, but also to some of these levered corporations. And one of the things, I mean, Trevor, that you help out on is looking at various parts of the market. And I think in one of the recent pitch books that you put together, it showed that the interest coverage ratio for the Russell 2000 small cap stocks, it's sub 2x, which means that a lot of the businesses down capitalization aren't really generating a huge amount of earnings before interest and taxes to satisfy their interest obligations. So if that interest cost remains higher for longer, or you have interest costs remaining higher for longer with the double whammy of stickier inflation leading to depressed earnings, that can deteriorate further. And, you know, 1.7x isn't really far away from 1x. The prospect of having liquidity or solvency problems for a lot of these companies certainly intensifies.
Well, and it makes it tough from a variety of standpoints as well, right? I mean, the ability to invest more back into the business, to do R&D, right? All those types of things are kind of hamstrung if, you know, you're just trying to pay your debt.
Yeah, it's a great point. So I think that's enough pessimism for the day. Maybe we'll turn it back to our headlines.
What is our headline this week for strength?
The AI momentum continues.
Headline weakness.
Bifurcated consumer picture. And we're picking up that context from a lot of earnings calls we've been on.
Headline opportunity.
AI requires real assets.
And a headline threat.
Sticky inflation.
Episode 101 of the Annex Wealth Management SWAT podcast. Trevor Narges, Supervisor Trading Team. Thanks.
Thank you.
And we got Jason Cooper, Director of Equity Research. Thank you.
Thanks, Danny.
Annex Wealth Management, LLC, is a registered investment advisor. For more information about our firm, please visit annexwealth.com. The information in this podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only and is subject to change without notice. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and don't necessarily reflect on those of Annex Wealth Management, LLC. Information presented should not be construed as tax, legal, or investment advice, or a recommendation or a solicitation for the sale of any product or strategy. Listeners are encouraged to seek advice from qualified professionals to determine whether any information presented may be suitable for their specific situation. Investments involve risk. Neither Annex Wealth Management, LLC, nor its podcast participants shall be liable for losses resulting from decisions based on information or viewpoints presented on this podcast.